Mark, thank you so much for doing this session. Now, Mark Batras, you might be the fastest runner we have interviewed on the Race Pace podcast yet. And you have been running competitively for almost 30 years. You're also the world's toughest mudder champion in 2021. You're an elite obstacle course race and running coach as well. Now, what I really like is that you have passion for mechanical engineering. Your family is extremely fit and you do lead a really active, healthy lifestyle. Now, you will be competing exactly a month from now at Tough Mudder Infinity in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So really appreciate, you know, you doing this session, and I'm pretty much sure our listeners in here, you will definitely like to learn something about you. So thank you so much, Mark, for doing this session.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, before we kickstart this episode, just wanted to check, you know, Mark, how's your day been so far? And what is it that you're expecting in 2024? Are there any specific races that you're looking forward for?
I mean, right now I'm just focusing on Lula, just that Tough Mudder race. That's my major focus right now. You know, training went well today, so that was great. I'm pretty fit right now and I'm excited. So everything's going pretty good. Yeah.
That's absolutely wicked. Now, Mark, everyone who's done obstacle course race and marathon events in US definitely know who you are, but for our listeners in the UAE, can you give us a bit introduction about yourself?
Yeah. You know, just kind of started running when I was like 8 years old. Started with like USA track and field races, and then kind of progressed into high school races, and then like was one of the faster high schoolers in the country, and then went to college, got really fast in college, had some health issues in college that kind of held me back towards my junior and senior year, but graduated and then started doing like professional marathoning and kind of getting into that world. And then switching over to OCR like in 2015. And from there, just kind of kept doing it. So kind of had fun.
What I'm going to do is, you know, in the show notes below, I'm definitely going to mention all of the podcasts that you have done, because I remember you shared your experience doing the first obstacle course race. I think it was in 2014 or 15 at Utah, right?
Yeah. That was a rough one. Yeah, that was really tough. But, you know, it goes to show that if you're not prepared for these races, that they could take a really big toll on your body. And if you are prepared, you could do really well. So it's just about preparation, having the right understanding of what training is actually required. Yeah. I made a lot of mistakes in training, like in 2015, 2016, and didn't get it right until like 2017, where I realized like I need a lot more rest from this type of training, because it's so intense that, you know, you need more rest days in between efforts, or else you're going to get super, super tired. So kind of helped me out and helped me with my coaching and everything. So it's been a great journey. Yeah.
And am I right in saying that you're a Spartan pro athlete going back to 2017 as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Because most of the athletes in UAE, they might have done Spartan race probably in 2018 and 19. So, you know, if you were to compare their journey with yours, you're definitely leaps and bounds ahead. So, you know, thank you so much for sharing your experience. Now, Mark, I know what your PBs are, but I really want you to tell our listeners what your PBs are on 5K, 10K, and half marathon, and even full marathon. And the reason why, I have a co-host for this particular podcast, and I told him your 5K PB, and he typed really, and I told him your 10K, he typed really with everything in capital. And I told him the marathon, he was like, no way. So why don't you tell our listeners about your PBs?
Yeah, my 5K, I believe, is a 14:28. My 10K is a 29:25. My half marathon is a 105:42. And my marathon is a 2:19:07. Yeah.
2:19:07.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was listening to your podcast where you were talking about how difficult it is to cross a 2 minute and of 2 hours and 5 minute mark, isn't it?
Yes. Like even in my training and everything, like I thought like if everything went perfect and I had a perfect day and everything was like kind of like everything went right, I thought I could run like a 2:12. And a lot of the guys that were faster than me were just naturally faster than me, like because of their abilities in the 5K and the 10K. So like to me, it looked like, you know, a 205 would be like ideal or possible, but anything under that would be pretty impossible. So
what was your immediate reaction, you know, when you found out about someone broke the 2 hour barrier?
Oh, I just kind of like, I was nonchalant about it. I didn't, I'm not impressed by it, because I think it's based on synthetic, you know. It's like, I believe that most likely if you're under 204, you're most likely on some type of drug or some type of synthetic that's making you faster. Like EPO tends to help people the longer you go. So like it will give you no benefit if you're it will give you a minor benefit in a 1500 meter race. In a 5K race, it gives you more benefit. In a 10K race, it gives you more. Half marathon, even more. A marathon, well, so much more.
Yeah.
So the higher up in the race you go, the more EPO will be a asset than anywhere else. So to me, anybody that's like under a 203 is like, or 204 is very suspect. I would be very hard pressed to say that all the people under 204 most likely are on some kind of synthetic. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I've gone and I've done that journey and I've seen, you know, many, many people train and many people that were a lot stronger and faster than me, but, you know, they all hit a roadblock when it comes to like 206. Yeah. And it's funny because the marathon has progressed so well in the last like 5 to 6 years, but that progression hasn't occurred with any, you know, like it seems to be only one continent that's doing really well.
True. I totally
everywhere
agree.
Else is like, oh no, like you guys haven't got better yet. And when you look at their training and you look at the modalities and how they're doing their training and what's different and what are they doing differently, and there's no difference. And that's the problem. It's like the training is 99% the same. So if we're talking about 99% the same in training, yet we're getting like a 15% difference in performance, that's a huge disparity. And mm-hmm. the fact that it's not only like one athlete or two athletes, but it's like a slew of athletes, and it makes it seem like training camps are seemingly doing something inappropriate with their athletes. But that's my outside observation. Obviously, it's my opinion. I don't know if these are facts, but I wouldn't be surprised if I was absolutely correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and your opinion matches with, you know, some of the athletes I've recently interviewed. We did have a group panel, and they said pretty much exactly the same thing, you know, that you were saying. Now, Mark, on your Facebook, roughly around 2 years ago, you posted NCAA Division II Western Regional Championship, which you won. And what you also mentioned is that you weren't sure if VJ Jones was born back then. So can you tell our listeners, you know, about the whole NCAA Division Western Regional Championship? Because we are not aware about that, particularly in UAE.
Yeah, pretty much we have in cross country, we have our conference championships, and then we have our regional championships, and then we have national championships. So conference championships are like pretty much people within your conference. In NCAAs, it's kind of weird because like it could be like you could have people from different states and different areas that are in your conference. And then when you go to regional championships, that's like it includes more geographic people. So for us, it's like, we had to race against people from like Alaska and some from other states, but our conference was typically people like in California, and I think we had just mostly California. But so like all the Western region, when we did Western Regional Championships, it was now we incorporate more of the states and more of the qualifiers from other conferences. And then I think it was like the top three or four go to national championships in terms of teams and individuals and all that stuff. Yeah. So
excellent. What I'm going to do is, you know, in the show notes, I'm definitely going to copy paste and put out your numbers. And if I'm not mistaken, you also mentioned about the importance of the right shoes, where you said that, you know, if you had VJ shoes back then, you could have been even faster, right?
Yeah. I mean, back then it was like, I think like the running shoes were okay. I mean, they weren't bad. It's like, and the shoes I would probably pick would have been relatively similar. But I think that shoes nowadays that are making a big difference are like training shoes, because like back then it's like the training shoes weren't as they weren't as good. I mean, nowadays we have more cushier shoes, we have better technology to keep us injury free. So I've noticed that like when I get going and my training starts to really flourish and start to really like come into its own, it's like I get injured less now than I used to, because back then it's like my shoes would last like maybe a month, and then that was it. I had to get rid of them, and I'm like, wow, that's like nowadays it's like, oh, they last a little bit longer than that, so it's a little better. Yeah.
And am I right in saying that you're the face of VJ shoes as well, because you tend to advertise that quite a lot as well, right?
Well, right now, like they kind of did a pause with all their sponsorships. So right now, VJ Shoes, I don't believe they sponsor anybody. They kind of just pause on everybody. And that was since last year. So every once in a while, I'll talk about them because I'm like, you know, they're a great company and I just want them to do well. So I'll just mention them and I just kind of give them some love. But yeah, right now, I think they're paused on everybody. Yeah.
And you mentioned about company, and what I did listen to one of your episodes, I think it was with The Answer Is Yes, where you talk about turning your sport into business. Now, what I tend to do is, Mark, I try to identify, is it your passion and is it something that you're good at? In your case, clearly the answer is yes for both. So talk to us about what is it that podcast all about, because you discuss how you turn your sport into business, right?
Yeah, like pretty much it kind of led to the fact that a lot of people were asking me for coaching. In the space of Spartan racing, and a lot of people are asking me for coaching outside, like at 5Ks and stuff like that. So I was just like, wow, I keep getting asked like to coach people, and instead of just saying no, I'm going to focus on my own things and my own stuff, I was like, you know what, I need to really take this information and do my best with it. So I started doing more research on what app I was going to be on and what I wanted to do. And then I started saying yes to all these people and saying like, yeah, I'm going to coach you. I have knowledge that you want and that you can benefit from. So absolutely. Like I will coach you and I will do my best to give you the information as easily as possible. And now we have a great product. We have a great service that we provide to people, and it's been great. So yeah, it's just taking an understanding of what you do. And this could be anything you do in OCR and sports or anything. It's like, you know, sometimes you wear like a shirt or something and people like it and they're like, hey, where'd you get that? Like, oh, it's mine. It's like, oh man, I really want one. Like, can you make me one? Just say yes, like go for it. You know, you might be starting a business that you didn't know that needed to be made, but yeah. Stuff like that happens all the time. So, you know, most of the time I tell people, if you like it, most likely so someone else is going to like it too. But so like with me, I took it as, you know, I could provide people with something that I'm really passionate about and want to give to people anyway. So to be able to give good training is one of my passions in life. It's funny because I just saw a notebook that I had when I started my job that I currently have. And I was like, oh man, in the notebook, I was thinking about starting a business, and it went through an entrepreneur's like their journey. And it said, like, if you had all the money in the world, what would you do? And money was no object and you had all of everything was done, what would you do in life? And I put coaching. And I was like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, that is absolutely great. And you know, one thing which really stood out for me when I was listening to the episode with The Answer Is Yes, and I made my 16-year-old niece listen to one part, where you actually said that your approach and attitude is, let's get this thing done, rather than thinking over it. And that, I think, is so important, especially not just for athletes, even for business owners. So, you know, having that attitude definitely benefits, you know. You don't think about it, you directly go out and do that. So, you know, definitely really interesting point. Now, earlier on, we talked a little bit about sponsorship. Now, from a business point of view, what suggestions do you have, let's say, to Josina, to race directors, even to organizers, or even, you know, companies that are sponsoring athletes?
Yeah, I'm gonna answer the first part first. Like, you know, when it comes to my motivation, it's all about just getting the work done. And I love that because, like, the first thing I do before I set out on a goal is I write down all the workouts that I want to do in lead up to a certain race. And that's how I train my athletes, is I look at a race and I build it backwards. And then when I build it backwards, that allows me to know that these are the workouts that are ideal to have the athlete peak on the right time frame and the right date. And if something happens, we can always adjust and make adjustments and make sure we can have like an optimal performance towards the end of the block. But I wake up in the morning and I know what I'm going to do. You know, and it's like, and I have a list of all the stuff I have to do for work, and I have a list of everything I have to do for my business. And it's like, everything is just a list that I just check off one thing at a time. And the faster I can do it, the better I can, you know, have time with my kids, like when I pick them up and have time with them. So for me, it's just like, if you execute and you have objectives, that's better than like an overall like a wish or a plan. You know, it's like, oh, I want to, you know, if you're an entrepreneur and you're telling yourself like, oh, I want to make $1 million, you know, and it's like, well, what does that entail? Like in your space, that might mean that you have to get like 100 clients or 100 people. Well, how are you going to get 100 people? Well, that means you have to contact so many people a day, because you're going to miss out on, you know, you're going to contact 20 people, but only 5 of them are actually going to say yes. So, you know, you got to make sure you continue to put those numbers in, or else you're not going to hit your mark. So making clear objectives is very important in every facet of life. So if you're doing the right objectives, it just makes things easier, because it's not a matter of motivation. It's just a matter of, this needs to get done. Like, it's just like, oh, I wake up and that has to get done. It's not a, like, I think people that are like, I need to get motivated to do something. It's like, well, if you have to get motivated to do something, then that means you're not motivated for your goal. Like, your goal should be the motivation. And if that's the motivation, then all you need to do is the task. If you accomplish the task, then you get your goal. That's the motivator right there.
That is an excellent and powerful advice, especially even for businesses as well, right? Especially for startups. I definitely 100% agree to that.
Yeah. And I mean, that kind of like, it just lets you focus in on what needs to be done. Like, my motivation is this much success or this much, the numbers, whatever it needs to be. All right, let's execute. Let's do this. Let's do these tasks that I need to do today, that I know that in the quarter that they have to be done. So this is what I got to do. So
what I'm liking is, you know, this is where your management experience is kicking in as well. You know, yeah. Definitely beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in terms of advice, like in terms of what OCR, like what the space is doing and how it's working right now, I think a lot of the issues like affecting OCR right now is like, you know, COVID had a big effect on what's going on with OCR. Like right now, there's like not that much emphasis in North America on the professional series and all that stuff. So it's not going to be as big as it used to be. To me, I think that's, you know, that's where the strategy is, where they're going right now. But what Spartan has decided to do is, instead of have like 25 or 26 events in a year, they're pushing it to more like 40 events in a year in the United States. So at least we know where our, like all that prize money and all that stuff, we know where it's going. It's going into creating more events. And so that's where Spartan has decided to spend their money, is to spend money in creating more events. My only advice for them is to make sure that they are very lean and modular in how they actually put on the event. They should try and do their best to be efficient and cost effective in actually putting on the event as possible. So meaning like a lot of their cost comes into rental of the facilities and rent and outsourcing of the building crew and all these things. With how many events they have this year, I mean, it might be even more prudent to have a building crew inside, like inside Spartan Race or something like that. So it's like they have to look at these different cost saving opportunities and really think about the modularity of their actual obstacles and try to make them as concise and as modular as possible. Because right now it's just it's like a traveling circus with them. It's yeah. They have these huge big rigs and they come in and they put on these events, but when I see it, I'm like, you have to put this all together with huge scaffolding things and all these apparatuses. And I'm like, you know, big cranes and forklifts and, you know, huge machines that dig out the ground and all these things. And I'm like, that all those things cost money. And that's the big cost when it comes to OCR. And if they can reduce that in any way and have it so it's a little bit more modular and a little bit more cost effective, that would be better than for them to, you know, do it the way they've been doing it. So that's, I mean, I just see that when I walk through the race, I'm always looking at how much things cost and where the costs are. And that's just how my mind works. So when I'm walking through the venue, I'm like, oh, that's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot. And I'm like, I'm already putting estimates at like, you know, oh my, like that's like $200,000 to put this dang thing on. Like, this is a lot of money. Like they really should lean this up. And if they did that, they would do a lot better in terms of, you know, being able to not only have this much events, but being able to still have professional racing and still have like the professional scene still going on. I think they're making a big mistake with like charging people for like photos and stuff like that. I'm like, that's not smart, because a big part of why people got into OCR was because of the marketing plan. And the marketing plan was being organic, the marketing being organic and people sharing their stories about them doing the races themselves made it accessible to other people in their circles where they're like, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I should try that too. So I think that is, you know, what the focus should be on when it comes to their marketing schemes. Like right now, I'm like really disappointed with like, they're doing like, they're trying to be like Red Bull right now, or they're like, oh, look at this extreme stuff on our Instagram. And I'm like, this is not OCR. Like OCR is, you know, our community. It's everybody focused in on doing something amazing. And then it's funny, 'cause like you start a race and you're just like, I'm here to have fun. And then in the midway through the race, you start meeting people you didn't know. You start helping people you had no idea, like you were going to help this day. And they become inspired, and they, like it's their first time and you're helping them. And by helping them, the next time they do a race, they help someone else who's doing it for the first time. And it's just like a trickle effect. And everyone just like has so much love and appreciation for each other that it just like, it's just so... I like going to these events because it's like, it feels like a big warm blanket. It feels so good. And I'm like, that's what the marketing team needs to focus on, because that's what OCR is. It's not this extreme, like, oh, crazy stuff. Like, look at this crazy stuff. I'm like, that's not really what OCR is. OCR is really about the community itself. And Red Bull doesn't have a community. Red Bull's a beverage. It doesn't have anything. So they had to associate themselves with anything, which it was extreme. So they said, let's do an extreme marketing scheme. And it worked for them because they don't have anything associated with their brand. It's just a beverage. So it's nothing really. So a marketing team saying like, okay, we have nothing, create something out of it. Okay, let's do some extreme events and hire people and do extreme stuff. And that'll be our thing, is extreme crazy stuff. Okay, that's what Red Bull does. But it's Spartan and Tough Mudder. You have a community, you have an ethos, you have something to actually sell and promote. It's more than just a beverage. So it's like they really need to shift their marketing into like how OCR changes you as a person, not just, you know, oh, it's just this generic event that you're going to do. It's like, no, this event could change your life. Like, don't you want your life changed? It's like, oh wow, yes, I do. Like, this will be fun. So that, I think, you know, that's the miss that most of the organizations are doing right now. But that's it.
Definitely great advice. And am I right in saying, Mark, that in US they charge for spectators as well, and for baggage drop also there's like a charge for it? Has that always been that way, or
they kind of bundle it up, so they incorporate that in the price of the ticket now, which
I see. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a little better, because I think people didn't like the fact that, oh, now you have to spend another $5 and another $5 and another $5. It's like, just put it all in one price and then offer it all in one thing, and it would be a lot more streamlined, which they've done. And I think a lot of people like that a lot better than having to have like, oh, you swipe your card at the baggage check. It's like, oh, great. Now I got to pay for this. Now I got to pay for that. It's like, it's all included. So now they're like, oh, this is way more streamlined, because now we're not collecting money when people are parking. They're just parking, and it's just getting things done a lot quicker. Yeah,
and the things that you mentioned, you know, regarding the cost associated, let's say, for digging up the ground and the massive rigs, I think that is an area which hybrid fitness has captured on, and they're doing hybrid events, and, you know, DECA is also part of that, and towards the later part, you know, I just have one teeny tiny questions regarding hybrid events. Now, Mark, talk to us about your training. What does an average week look like for you? And I'm hoping the competitors will definitely be paying a lot of attention to this part.
Yeah, I mean, I think like when I was like marathon training, I would get up to like 130, like 140 miles a week, like sometimes averaging close to like 120 miles a week. I don't do that anymore. I'm pretty old now. So I kind of scaled that back. I typically do somewhere around like 80 miles a week. And, you know, I don't put in a lot of like longer efforts like most people do. I kind of cap it. I kind of came to like the realization that like the big efforts, like a 3 hour, 4 hour run, are not necessary. They tend to beat my body up more than make me strong. So I tend to say to myself, like, I have 2 hours in my long run, and that's pretty much it. I'm capped out. And then like, it's just like, I kind of put it like, you know, like when you do an hour run, you get to put like one credit in the bank. And then when you do a 2 hour run, you get two credits, and anything in between there will be the fraction thereof. So it's like, oh, you got an hour and a half, you get like 1.5 credits, you know. But and the idea in your training is to put as many credits in as possible for your base. Now, the problem is you only can max out at two credits at a time. So if you do a 2.5 hour run, you don't get extra. And if you do a 3 hour run, you don't get extra. So if you only cap out at 2 hours, that's it. That two units is the most you could put in. That's it. That's all you could put in. Because I started to notice that like there was a degradation in my joints, in my legs, in my muscles, after I did such a big effort, that the next 2 to 3 days I had to come down in miles. And I typically do mileage that is more consistent throughout the week. So like the shortest run I'll do is like 10 miles, and the longest run I'll do is like, you know, closer to like 18 to 20 miles or something like that. So it's like, I'm not gonna have like a huge fluctuation where I'm like, oh, I did 30 miles one day, and then I did 5 miles or nothing the next day, and then 5 miles, and then 10 miles, and then got back into it. I noticed that those bigger training block, like those bigger training efforts, just they tend to hurt you more than help you. So there's no point in actually like hurting yourself to a point where you can't run the next week. So you might as well just keep everything mellow and show up healthy to the race than to beat yourself up and not be prepared. Yeah.
And there's a saying, you know, less is more. And I did see a video on Instagram, you know, where you mentioned about training, and you specifically mentioned about 9 hours training per week is sufficient for a podium level.
Yeah.
So for some of the athletes who want to smash the podium, can you share some more insights into that?
Yeah. I mean, like I'll typically run like an hour or a little bit less in a day. And then like for my longer efforts, I'll go like an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then that's pretty much it. It's like, you don't really need to put in like I think a lot of people think like, oh, you need to quit your job and you need to do this and that to in order to make the podium. I mean, there's a lot of athletes that we have in OCR that are like, oh yeah, I only run like 30 to 40 miles a week, but they're putting in like hours and hours and hours on the bike. Like when you look at their training, you're like, okay, yeah, you ran 30 miles a week, but you put in you're doing like 2 hours a day on the bike. It's like you're taking forever to train. It's like you're spending your life training. And it's like, for me, I probably most likely train the least amount of time than anybody. I don't put in a lot of time into this. I put in enough time to get like a maximum amount of, like, I always say, like, your aerobic capacity is, you know, you're putting in units and it's like a cup you're filling with water. And then my cup is always full, but I don't overfill my cup. And a lot of people overfill their cup thinking like, oh, I'm going to get better. But it's like, once you maxed out your aerobic capacity, that's it. Like, it's maxed out. It's like, there's nothing more to gain than running more and more miles. It's like, you're not going to get anything out of that. You can strengthen your joints and everything else doing other exercises or other modalities in strength training than doing running. It's like, you're wasting your time trying to strengthen your body. Like, oh, I'm going to do it by doing more running. It's like, that's the worst way to do it, because running is a reactive process that is like snapping a rubber band. It's not like, it's not putting more fibers on that rubber band. And that's what strength training is. So it's like, it's kind of a waste of time. Yeah.
And what you're saying, you know, Mark, does resemble something to what Henry Cejudo is saying. I'm not sure if you watch UFC at all. So he's.
I watch it, but I don't know. Oh, go ahead, explain.
So you should definitely follow Henry Cejudo. I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. And what you're saying is exactly what he preaches as well. So he's a wrestling Olympic athlete, gold medalist. He's a 2-division champion. What he's actually worried about when he's coaching is when they are reaching optimal performance. And he's actually noticing is, you know, that during the fight time, just few days before he's actually, and based on his experience, everyone is overtraining. So what he does is, you know, he tries to tell them, you know, less is more. And you can see the expression when he's actually saying that he genuinely does not like when people are overtraining. So, you know, and all the points that you said does make a lot of sense. He's also focusing on lesser duration, but going with full intensity as well. And what I wanted to know is, Mark, do you follow a similar approach? Let's say when you're doing a North American series or Savage Elite Race series or for the upcoming Tough Mudder Challenge as well.
Yeah, I mean, my approach is pretty consistent. Like, I don't really change up too much. And the reason why is because, like, I know what's going to keep me healthy and I know it's going to keep me strong all the way up until the race. So, like, the only time I'll change things up is if I have like a small little injury or if something comes up, like I'll change my training up to handle that. And then after that's completed, then I'll get back into my normal training. Yeah. I try not to change it up too much because it's so effective. Like, I get in shape really quick and everything starts to go, it starts to get better and better. And then after that, it's like I get into peak physical condition. And then once I'm at peak physical condition, I just prepare myself for the race. Yeah.
That's absolutely great. And Mark, I was listening to one of your podcasts where you're talking about Spartan race and obstacle course race, essentially in general, is similar to a Rubik puzzle. And there are different elements to obstacle course race event, not just running. So can you share some lights into that?
Yeah, because, like, you know how you have a Rubik's Cube, and if you change certain aspects of your training, so you're focusing on one side, which is like could be your running, and you neglect your strength, then it messes up the other side. So it's like you really have to understand once you start to work on your running, it's like you can't neglect your strength or your grip work or any of the other things, but you can let those things like kind of take a back seat, but keep them in mind. So that when you're working it and you're working on getting better at one thing, you're not neglecting those other assets and those other modalities. So making sure that you're focusing on every aspect of OCR while you're building up, you know, your aerobic capacity.
Fantastic. Now, Mark, you've done several obstacle course races and trail events. Is there a specific event that stands out for you personally?
Oh, I mean, my favorite event's been the world's toughest. Like that was like that was awesome. Like get that whole experience was just it was amazing, especially having like my family as my pit crew and everything else. It's like even today, like this last Christmas, like we had our we've had our family get together, and we just like we still talk about it, and we still like bring it up because it was such a bonding moment for my family. So it's great. Yeah, I mean, this is the best experience I've ever had in
And
our
I
age.
think you put out a long post as well explaining what that felt, right? Because based on your 30 years of experience, that might be the most iconic moment. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've always wanted to win like a really big race and just have a like just feel awesome the whole way through. And that was pretty much that race. I was like, I felt great from the start and all the way to the finish. Like I only had like my hamstring started to hurt towards the end, but I made my last lap like pretty good. So I felt like consistent throughout the whole entire race. And I was like shocked. I was like, oh wow, like I finished feeling good. Like and my energy levels were actually really high when I finished. I know a lot of guys were not feeling great when they were done. And I was feeling like, oh man, like if my hamstring felt a little bit better, like I think I can keep going like for hours. Like I don't feel like I need to stop right now. I just the race is over, so I'm done. So that was a good feeling.
Was there any specific moment during the race, Mark, where you looked at the other athletes and you said, "You know what? I've got it in my bag, and there's no way or no one is going to beat me at this point of time."
Not really. Like I just kind of kept going. I know Trevor Sykos was like actually like he was running good at in the nighttime, and he was making good ground. And then there got to a point where we got to the daytime again, and like we just stayed in the same distance away from each other. And I was like, oh, okay, we're pretty consistent now. Like we're doing the same things. And I know, like I knew at the time, like oh, if I keep going, he's not going to be able to do another lap. And even when I was doing the lap, I was not like, I try not to worry about like, oh, I got it in the bag, that kind of stuff, because like I'm always so focused on executing and doing my plan and doing the obstacles properly and making sure I'm like executing like to the highest level. More than I am like, oh yeah, I'm gonna win. I didn't think about that until like the very last few obstacles. Like I just came in with so much gratitude for the people that were there, that were at obstacles that I saw for like 2 to 3 hours that were helping people, and I just gave them hugs and the last lap, and I was so excited, and they were excited for me, and they knew I got the record, and we were just. It was just elated, like everyone was there, and we were just like, oh my God, like this is it, I did it, and I couldn't have done it without you. And they were very appreciative, and they were it was great. So I was like, it was just a huge moment for me in that last like 4 or 5 obstacles, like just thanking everybody that was there. And yeah, that I mean, when I came in, I saw my boys, and I came in with them, and I was like, oh yeah. I'm like, I'm gonna win, so this is great. Yeah.
And am I right in saying that the 115 miles, that record still stands as the maximum distance, right? As of till date?
Yep. That's still there. Yeah. So.
That's absolutely wicked. I mean,
Yeah.
yeah. Now, Mark, you're a coach as well. You're a running coach and obstacle coach as well. But before we get into your coaching, what I wanted to know, if there is a coach that you were inspired by, and are there certain things that you take away from him or her?
Yeah, I mean, I've always just been fascinated with running, like just like understanding it and understanding what training does and everything. I actually had a friend of mine who did coaching as well for a little bit, but like we would talk about the training that we were doing in high school, and we would talk about like, oh, what other trainings were there, and we would. Like he would give me a book, and then I would give him a book, and then we would kind of like look at stuff, and we'd be like, oh man, this is cool stuff. Like we're starting to learn more about what other people are doing and how other people are training, because we had like my high school coach is like, he was amazing, and he still is coaching, and he still is amazing. So it's like his program like produced so many like state championships and like so many different programs that use his stuff that are still very successful. So like what we were doing was actually perfect for what we needed to be good at, which was, you know, 3 miles and 5K racing. So like he was a big inspiration for, you know, me and what I do today and how I do it. Yeah.
And am I right in saying that you've been coaching for well over a decade?
Well, let me see. Well, I started coaching. The first person I ever coached was my mother. So that was, that was like in, I think I was like a sophomore in high school. And it was funny because she would show me her training, and it was pretty much what a lot of people do when they get ready for a marathon, which is like, oh yeah, you do like, you know, you do a big long run and then you do a lot of little runs and you do a big long run, a lot of little runs. And I was like, this is the worst training I've ever seen. And she's like, really? And I was like, you need to be consistent with your miles. Like, I'd rather have you go less on your long run, but like do more consistent miles, kind of like what I do today. And she started to do that and then was more consistent on her miles, got more miles in and more, like I said, like more units, more aerobic units. And then in the end, she ended up qualifying for Boston. And then she ran Boston, I think like two. Oh. Yeah. So it was great for her because like she just started marathoning at the time and got into it. And then, wanted to qualify for Boston, but was doing the wrong training, started doing the training with me and then qualified for Boston and then started doing well. Yeah. So
that's absolutely, that's absolutely a brilliant achievement. And one thing, you know, Mark, which stood out for me on your website, which I'm going to mention in the show notes below, is that you actually stated that seeing my athletes improve brings me more joy than anyone, than my own particular race as well. And that's one of the reasons why you started MGB Racing. This is such a true and beautiful statement. And I do think that, you know, people in the business world should definitely follow that as well. Now, keeping that in mind, is there a specific athlete's improvement that you're extremely proud of?
I think right now, I get so excited about watching my sons run. I have two boys and like their improvement is just like, it's amazing. I have my son, Marky. He's like, he's 11 years old and he's already running. He ran a 10:09 3000. So that's moving. And then my younger son, Nico, he just ran an 800 meter time trial and he ran like a 2:46, which is only 4 seconds off of what his brother was doing at the same age. So I'm like, you know, they're running super fast. I get so excited for them. I coach a high school team now in the city and it's like I get excited when I see them run. It's like everyone that improves, it's like, it's such a huge, I get so excited for them because they put so much effort into it and so much work. And when things go right and everything works out, it's like, it's so wonderful. And I'm like, I get really excited for them. It's so much fun.
Am I right in saying that they are 12 years old, 10 to 12 year old around that age?
My younger son is 9 and then my older son is 11. Yeah. Okay. So 9.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Mark. Let's say a decade from now, if you and all three of them, both of your sons were competing, let's say for a 1 mile race, who do you think would win?
Oh, they would beat me for sure. Like in 10 years, like I'm going to get smoked so bad. Like I would be surprised if Marky couldn't beat me like in 2 to 3 years.
Oh, okay.
He's getting fast, really fast. Like I have to go, like when I help him in workouts, like he'll do repeats of 800 meters at 2:30. So it's like he's running 5 minute pace when it comes to his 800 meter repeats. So I have to go pretty hard in order to beat him. And I'm like, in 2 to 3 years, he's probably going to be smoking me.
And when he does, I'm sure you're going to be happy. And this just reminds me of an episode that I did have with Yancy Kulp. You know, he used to run with his father. And when he was actually talking about it, he got a bit teary and he got a bit emotional, because according to him, that was the most best moments of his life. So, you know, I think the experience that you're doing for him, I'm sure he's going to remember it for the rest of his life. So, you know, definitely, definitely brilliant stuff. Now, regarding your coaching, Mark, that you have, that is MBG, is it mbg/racing.com?
It's mgb-racing.com, okay. Yeah.
Perfect. I'll go ahead and mention that in the show notes below. Now, for the listeners and athletes from UAE, how can they benefit from your coaching experience? Do you offer like online session or video analysis as well?
Yeah, pretty much we do. Everything's online. So we do remote coaching. So like we have an app that we work with. So you download the app and then all the workouts are on the app, and it's pretty easy to do. I think we've trained one athlete so far from the UAE. He was from Dubai. And it was right before the pandemic. So right when the pandemic happened, he was like, man, he's like, I can't train as much as I would like to. And it kind of led to him like not training with us anymore. But it was, you know, we've trained people from, I think like Brazil and Spain, all over the world. So it's been fun to learn, like, you know, to talk to people. Usually we do like Instagram calls, and then we go and we'll talk and have an update on Instagram and stuff like that. And then for the most part, we just, you know, we coach people online, and then we also do the form analysis and stuff like that. It's kind of hard with like corresponding with like, okay, go and change this. Okay, come back. And then the next week it's like, all right, now change this. But, yeah, you know, in the end we get it done, and we've helped people do better form running over, you know, online correspondence. So it just takes a little longer. Yeah. But when we do personal training, it's like, all right, this is what you got to do. Okay, fix this, fix that. Bam, you're done. It's like, all right.
Exactly. Cool. And lately, you know, Mark, there's hybrid events picking up, and there is an HYROX event coming up in Dubai as well. So do you offer training, let's say, for hybrid events as well?
Yeah, we do. We train a couple people that do hybrid events. And, you know, it's been pretty good. We've had them improve, like, you know, a couple minutes on their times. It's like I you know, we just haven't promoted it too much, like that we do hybrid racing like training, because like I haven't done one myself. It's like I haven't like done a I've done simulations, but I haven't done a you know, an event. So I'm like, oh man, I really got to get out there. I might actually do a Decafit this year. I'm thinking about it, so that might be something on the horizon.
I think you definitely, definitely smash it, because I was listening to one of the episodes where you're talking about double sandbag carry. So if you could do that, I'm pretty much sure, you know, Decafit is definitely up your alley. Now, Mark, let's talk about Tough Mudder Infinity. Tell us, how did you find out about it? And what are your thoughts about Tough Mudder Infinity in Saudi Arabia? What was your initial reaction when you found out about it?
Yeah, like at first, you know, I didn't hear anything. I was getting kind of ready for World's Toughest, and then, you know, they kind of let us know that the prize money wasn't as much as it was going to be, and I was like, okay, looking at, you know, in looking at when I race, it is a big effort in what I do, and I have to look at everything like from every angle. And then at the time I was looking at it from like, I would be coaching high school at the time. And I was like, well, I'm coaching high school, and in that week I have to actually go to league finals and do coaching for league finals and that stuff. So I was like, well, this is going to be a really big ask of me to do both things. And because it's my first year of coaching, I don't think I can leave the kids, you know, in that kind of like pressure. So I'm like, no, I should really stay and make sure everyone is taken care of. So I need to sacrifice my little thing, and I need to go and do this. This is going to be more important for the kids that we coach. And I think it was a great idea and it was a great sacrifice that I made, because like in the end, all the kids that I coach, they responded really well, like well into the playoffs of cross country running. So I came to California CIF, like they did really well and they did awesome. And it was just an awesome like experience for them. So I was like, hey, you know what? It was a great thing for us to stay here and make sure that we plant our roots and that we let the kids know that they're our first priority. So that was kind of like the biggest driver. I was like, well, I really have to focus on this. So that's why I missed that race. And then after that, I was talking to some people and they were telling me like, oh yeah, we might have another event that you might like get ready for. So just to let you know. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I think a week later, I got contacted by Obstacle Racing Media. And then they told me like, hey, there's a big event. It might be happening. We don't know yet. And, you know, it's probably going to happen in February, just letting you know. And I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And then it officially came out like, oh yeah, this is it. This is the event. It's going to happen. And then I got excited. I was like, oh, this is great. I mean, I didn't hear any details on, I had no details on like the distance or the time or anything, but they knew it was going to happen. So that got me excited because I knew it was going to be a longer distance race. I would be more worried if it was just like a 2-lap event or like, you know, yeah. Just like, oh, it's going to be like a 20K or something. I'd be like, oh man, it's going to be fast. But because of the distance and everything, I was like, okay, this is more in line with what I can do. I heard rumors that it was going to be like a 12-hour event and I got really excited. And then it got pushed down to 8-hour and I was like, I'm still excited.
So, well, I know the team, you know, who's organizing the event and they do have plans probably for a 12-hour event and even a 24-hour event, but we'll just have to wait and see how this particular event goes. And have you done events, let's say in Middle East or in similar conditions, let's say to the one that we have in Alula?
To be honest, like I have not been to the Middle East before. So this would be the first time I've ever gone to the Middle East. I know we've had a couple Spartan championships in Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi, yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't gone to any of those events and it just didn't work out for my schedule. But they keep doing it on the same weekend. And I'm like, oh, that's the same weekend as my son's cross country nationals. And I'm like, I can't, as much as I want to go to a world championship, I'm like, my son's racing is more important than mine. So I'm like, I'm like, there was a time where I was like, okay, my racing is more important, but now I'm like, nope, now his is. So I focus on their performance more than mine. It's always on the same weekend and I'm like, well, I can't make it because you guys keep doing it on the same weekend. But so I haven't gone, when we did the 24-hour event in Laughlin, it was very sandy. It was all sand. It was in the desert and it's pretty much similar footing and stuff like that. So I don't think it should impact me that much because I'm kind of decent at sand running, but I don't know how deep of sand it's going to be. So it, you know, there's probably 100 words for sand, just like Eskimos.
Yeah, the one that we had in Abu Dhabi, that is Al Watwa, the sand was completely different to the first Abu Dhabi World Championship that we had in Lever. That was absolutely pure soft sand, probably the softest sand you can ever imagine. And even all the international athletes, like, we have never seen such kind of sand. Because every time you take one step, you actually go down. And I'm not sure if you've seen the videos in the one in Lever. It was really, really soft sand. And then to have sand back carry, it was absolutely brutal. Now, regarding Tough Mudder Alula, is there any advice, you know, Mark, that you have for, let's say, local athletes who will be competing Tough Mudder Infinity? And to be honest, a lot of the local athletes from the Middle East, they might be doing the 8-hour event for the very first time.
Yeah, my advice is have fun. It's going to be a fun event. you know, make sure you are good with your nutrition. It's still 8 hours, so that's still a long time. Making sure you have nutrition with you, you know, either like carbohydrate replacement, like the small goos or something like that, or, you know, some kind of like something quick and easy to eat. And you want something that's going to give you some amount of energy and not to neglect your like protein intake. So make sure you have protein as well. So whatever you need to, whatever makes you comfortable and whatever is good that you like to eat, have those foods out. I like to do like rice with milk. It's like rice pudding. It's like a, okay. It's a Mexican like dish. And that's like my favorite thing. And it's like, it's just rice with milk and cinnamon and sugar. And I like it. So, you know, do what you like, do what's, you know, I, you know, it kind of gives me like a nostalgic feeling. So do stuff that you enjoy, that you like eating, and then, have fun. It's like, you got to have fun out there. And, if anything in your workouts, make sure you have good grip strength, because your grip strength has to last for 8 hours. So it's very taxing on the grip and it's very taxing on the body. So make sure you, are very focus on your obstacles as well as your running at the same time.
Yeah, and VJ Jones has recently put out a video where he's focusing on grip strength. What he's actually stated that, you know, he's got to hold it for at least 8 hours, but he's doing a team event. But the event that you're doing, Mark, some of the OGs of the game will be there. That is Ryan Atkins, John Albin, and there are going to be some pro trail runners as well. Now, based on your experience in marathon and obstacle course race, how do you think, you know, you're going to have a competitive advantage? And I wouldn't be surprised if you absolutely smash it, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think just having done the event before is a very good competitive advantage. And doing it recently, like, you know, they tend not to change obstacles too drastically from year to year. But if you're away for like a 3 or 4 years, it's like, oh, whoa, what's this? This is a little different. So it's like, it could be a little bit of a more of a drastic change for the guys that haven't done it in a while. So I think I'm pretty confident in my ability and in the obstacles that they have. And, you know, I'm just going to go out there and do my best. You know, I have the understanding of who I'm racing and who's in the field, and, you know, the best I can do is the best I can do. I'm going to do my best, and I know where these guys are at in terms of their fitness, and they, you know, they could smash it as well. So, you know, I just got to go out there and just run my race and have a good time. And, you know, as long as I'm having fun, I think I'm going to have a great experience. So that's my big thing. I'm more concerned about having fun in Alula than I am about, like, you know, like what I'm going to do in this race and how it's going to happen. It's like, no, it's a great experience. I think I'm looking forward to being out there and just like sightseeing and having a good time and being somewhere I've never been. So that's like the big thing for me. I just want to put on a good show for everybody. I want everyone to say like, oh, wow, that was very entertaining to watch Mark race. Like, so that's like, you know, that's what drives my training. I'm like, okay, I gotta be my best when I get out there. And then the race will take care of itself. Whatever happens, happens. I can't, you know, if someone trains 10 times harder and does crazy stuff, like, it is what it is, man. I just gotta go out there and have fun. Yeah.
And, you know, Mark, I was speaking to the organizers, and one thing what the organizing team is focusing on is the experience, especially for international athletes. They want to make it a lifetime memorable experience. And will your wife and kids be joining us as well for the Tough Mudder Infinity in Alula?
My wife is going to be there. My kids, not so much. yeah, it was just, they're going to be missing a lot of school this year. So I was like, oh, this is going to be a little bit too much on them. And right now, we just came back from a vacation from Europe. So I'm like, oh, they kind of missed a week of school already. So I'm like, oh, I can't miss a week and then come back in next month and miss another week. I'm like, oh, that's going to be really bad. So I was like, all right, we'll spread it out a little bit more.
And is your wife going to be competing for the 8-hour Infinity as well? Because she's a phenomenal athlete as well, and definitely an elite category athlete, right?
Yeah, she's more of a shorter course athlete. So her main distance is like the super events, and she stretches to the beast. She did one 4-hour race once, and she was like, I did not like that. That was not fun. So I'm like, okay, you don't have to race. Just go out there and have fun and have a good time and just, enjoy it.
She could still do the 5K or 10K event as well, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she might do something.
Yeah, and Mark, besides, let's say, training and running on the treadmill or trail runs, are there any non-fitness things that you do? Let's say like meditation or writing your goals, something which you mentioned, but what about affirmation or law of attraction? Let's say, not just for Tough Mudder Infinity, but for general races.
Not too often. I typically try to, I do my workouts, and I try to stay in a good mental state when I'm running. Try not to let my mind understand what I'm doing. So if you're constantly running and you're like, I'm running. It's like, go faster, harder. It's like, you're going to get mentally fatigued. I let my mind kind of wander. It kind of leads me into like creative and interesting things. It's weird. It's like my creativity flourishes when I'm running. So as I'm running, it's like I will think up some new interesting things either in like my workspace or in life or in training. And it's like, oh, wow, like that I wouldn't have come up with that without like the running that I was doing. So I typically do that when I'm running. And then, in terms of like mental cues or anything like that, I just try to keep myself calm and focused on what I'm doing. Lately it's been working really well, just in focusing in on what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, as opposed to saying like to myself, like, oh, this is one piece of the overall puzzle. And I'm like, nah, just enjoy each day, treat each day as one day. And that's it. I'm not worried about anything else. So kind of just, not really. I don't write in a journal. I don't do any of that. I take a different approach to like my mentality and mental training. Just because I had a realization one day and I was like, oh, there's two types of ways of looking at like going into a challenge or a trial. So when you go into a challenge, that's something you voluntarily decided to do. When you go into a race, you decided to get into this race. When you decide to do a challenge, you're voluntarily asking and telling yourself like, okay, I'm gonna do this, right? And challenges should not, they're typically not scary, because you can always pull out of a challenge. You can always back out. You can always skip out. It's like, it's not a big deal. But there are other challenges that come to you that are called trials. And trials are not, they're not voluntary. They come to you and they're unwarranted. They are not wanted, but regardless if you want to do it or not, it's here. So that's typically like if you have a sick loved one, or if someone in your family is dying, or you're in a situation in work where it's like you're going through a recession and you have to figure out how to keep that business going. That's a trial. Like, you're not in a challenge anymore. You're in a trial. That means you don't know when the end date is going to happen. You don't know when this is going to finish. And you are in a situation where you have to grit down and figure it out. And sometimes trials end unfavorably, and sometimes they end great and they end favorably. So once I realized that, I was like, oh, when I go into competitions, they're just challenges. They're not that hard. If you overthink it, you could be thinking that you're in a trial, but you're not. You're in a challenge. And when you realize that, you're just like, oh, this isn't that big a deal. Like, it's not that hard. It's just a challenge. But when you're in a trial, that's a different story. Now all those mental things that you need to do, those come into help. I mean, prayer comes into help. Understanding what you're doing, it's like, and what kind of trial you're in, it's like, it matters a lot. Having your family around you and really focusing in on the love that you have for each other really helps a lot. And that's what you need. So if you understand that in life, it's just like, these challenges are just so easy now. It's like, I go through these challenges and I'm just like, it's in terms of my effort, it's like maybe 10%, you know, it's like in my mental capacity, my mental effort, it's like 10% effort. But when I go through a trial, now we're talking 100% effort, very stressful, very, very life-changing, and it's life-altering. So once you realize that, it's like, oh man, like these challenges are easy. They're not that bad. It's like we tend to over-escalate these things in our mind. And I think, like, even the athletes that I have, I try to explain this to them, like, oh, like, you've gone through harder things in life. You do know that. Like, there are going to be harder things in life. Like, you need to relax. Like, this is not a big deal. Like, you shouldn't be thinking to yourself you're under so much pressure, because this is just fun. Like, we're just doing this voluntarily. This is just fun. So if it's voluntary, it's fun. It's a challenge. Like, you just enjoy yourself. Just go there and just enjoy yourself and have a good time. So that's how I look at things. Yeah.
That is definitely really wise wisdom. And what I think is, that is purely what a championship mentality is. So, you know, what I'm going to be doing is, you know, my niece who is 16, I'm definitely going to make her listen to this part, not just once, two or three times, because she's struggling a little bit with her schools right now. So definitely wise advice. Now, Mark, something what I wanted to ask next is what we already touched base upon, and that is regarding Spartan Race World Championship at Anwadpao. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, I could be wrong on this. This year, they have moved the date 1 week ahead. Now, if that is the case, do you think you and even your kids, they will be participating? Because if I'm not mistaken, this year, they have the Spartan Beast World Championship as well.
Yeah, I mean, that does sound enticing. Yeah, I mean, the fact that the date was moved, it does make it a little bit more possible in my schedule. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna look at it and figure it out and try to make it work. Yeah, it's ideally, like, we could do all events and everything in life, but sometimes we have to make concessions. So it is what it is. But you know, I'll try my best to get out there before they change the site, because most likely they're gonna change it in like probably 2 to 3 years. So. Yeah. You miss it, and you never do it. And it's like, oh man, I don't want to be like looking back and saying like, oh man, like, I didn't get a chance to do that. Like, I really should have did it. And I'm like, I really want to get out there. Yeah.
Yeah. If at all you were to do it, you know, I definitely do think you should probably run a running clinic as well, because I think last year before that, Ryan Atkins, he did have a running clinic after the World Championship as well. Now, besides Tough Mudder Infinity, is there any other specific event that you're looking forward for this year?
Right now, it's just the Tough Mudder Infinity has really got my focus. After that, I'm just going to I'm looking at other like ultra trail races and other events that I'm getting ready for. I'm looking at possibly doing some other like OCR and, you know, hybrid racing and stuff like that. So just kind of keeping my eyes open and seeing what's possible this year. But I'm really laid back about racing this year. It's like in years past, like, my schedule was really hardcore because, you know, I didn't have my kids racing. I didn't have, you know, it's like, there's a lot of different requirements now. Like, now I think I coach, in terms of kids that are like in elementary school, I think I coach around 60 kids there. And then when I coach high school kids, I'm coaching about 85 to 90 high school kids.
Oh, okay.
And then on top of that, I'm coaching OCR athletes as well. So at any given time, I'm coaching well over 200 people.
Yeah. So that's like a busy life. Yeah.
Yeah. So like right now I'm like, oh man, it's really hard to balance that out and kind of figure out who's training where and how they're training and everything. Yeah.
Now, I just have one question which I thought of right now. And what are your thoughts about Barkley Marathon? Do you think if you get a chance, you'll definitely go in for that as well?
I don't know. It's like, it seems like everyone gets torn up pretty bad in that race, like with all the thistles and like the vines with the thorns in them. Yeah. I'm like, oh man, it seems like I'll get more torn up than I would like having a good time. So like, I definitely want to do events that are fun, that are exciting for me. I'm trying to do my best to qualify for like Western States and stuff like that. Like do some really like cool 100-mile races, maybe in the future, trying to figure out what dates work with my schedule and the kids I train and everything. So like I said, like definitely taking a backseat on my racing. Yeah. And focusing on the kids now, but yeah, just trying to figure it out. Yeah.
And we are almost done with the podcast session, Mark. Now, I have two fun bits of information. The first is actually a question. What is your favorite genre of music and why?
My favorite genre of music? I would guess it's like just like rock and roll, alternative.
Oh, excellent.
Rock. Yeah. So like, some of my favorite bands are like The Strokes, Arctic Monkeys, and Cage the Elephant. Like those are my favorite bands. Yeah, but like, you know, California, I gotta like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I was just going to say that thing. But I'm not mistaken, just a few weeks ago they have decided to break up. No, that was Rage Against the Machine. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest, though, my taste in music is kind of eclectic. I created a world's toughest playlist, and I had that playlist going for world's toughest. Like I had a little speaker and then I had like going at the same time, and it had a bunch of different genres of music. I mean, I had hip hop in there. I have like, you know, I have hip hop with like Kendrick Lamar, Lupe Fiasco, Big Sean, Drake, T.I., Game, Kanye West, Lil Wayne, and let me see, what else do I got here? I got a Chance the Rapper, and then I go into my rock and roll stuff. Oh yeah, I got System of a Down, Rob Zombie, Slipknot, Rage Against the Machine, Korn, Metallica.
What about Slayer?
No Slayer. And let's see what else I got. Cage the Elephant, Strokes, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Cake, MGMT. And then I go into my 80s kick. So then I got Duran Duran, New Order, Talking Heads, Billy Idol. It's like Bruno Mars. It's like I got such an eclectic like taste in music, but it's, you know, I just like good music, really. I just love good music. And you know, whenever I get people on like metal and stuff like that, it's like, oh yeah, man, like I'm like, you gotta listen to Slipknot, like they got some good stuff, man. They're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, it's like, it's great music, you just gotta listen to it, it's like really good. And they're like, oh man, I didn't know metal was this. And I was like, yeah, it's like it could be. Sometimes the songs are almost like poetic, like, you know, System of a Down, like it, to me is like some of the best like poetry music I've heard. And I'm like, oh, this is great. So I don't know. That's just me.
And and the lyrics are quite, you know, intense as well.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, lately artificial intelligence has definitely taken the world by storm. Now, what I did, I took, you know, the transcripts from the previous episodes that you've done. I took the Instagram information that you posted and I put it on ChatGPT and I asked ChatGPT. I have the ChatGPT 4, which is like a paid one. So I asked them to say, what is it that they think about Mark Beatrice? I'm just going to read it out and let me know if you agree to it or disagree to it. I'm going to read it out verbatim. So let's see what ChatGPT says. It says, Mark Beatrice, beyond his athletic achievements, shines as a father, coach, and husband. showcasing a character that inspires, and as a father, he's dedicated and supported by a family, sharing his passion for running in OCR. They also say that his coaching philosophy reflects a holistic understanding, emphasizing individualized program and life lessons. And in his partnership with his wife, they share dedication for running an obstacle course race, and that serves as an inspiration. And Mark's positive attitude, resilience, and sports and sportsmanship resonate, making his journey a beacon of motivation for those seeking to overcome challenges and lead a life filled with positivity. I just have two more sentences. And what ChatGPT, artificial intelligence, says is that Mark also knows a bit or two about Six Sigma and loves his work and sees work as a reward, not a way to reward. He's actively involved with an initiative called Run to Save the Sharks. And overall, he's a badass and fantastic human being. So what are your thoughts about AI's thoughts about Mark Beatrice?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I like it. I think the most important things in my life are, like, you know, my family, my faith, and my kids, you know? So it's like, it's really great that it's like, oh, even the AI recognizes what I value in life. And when it comes to coaching, there's like a TV show I just recently saw. It's called, like, it's been out for a while, but it's called Ted Lasso. And I'm like,
oh yeah.
I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, someone actually coaches like me.
It is on Apple TV, right?
Yeah. And I was like, oh wow. Like, a lot of the stuff that he talks about, just like, oh, like, it's okay. Like, we lost. It's not a big deal. It's like, and then moving forward and getting better from and learning from your losses and just kind of moving forward with getting better as an athlete. And I always tell my kids, like, if there's anything in life, I'm like, there's one thing I learned later in life that I wish I would have learned when I was a kid. And it's never talk negatively about yourself. Never, ever, ever talk negatively about yourself. Don't talk bad about yourself, and don't talk negatively about yourself, because it doesn't help. There's no benefit from talking negatively about yourself. Calling yourself bad or like inadequate or anything like that is not going to help you become adequate or better. The only way that you're going to get better is if you change your habits. If you go out and say to yourself, oh, I need to do this. I didn't do this. Instead of yelling at myself saying that I'm a bad person or I'm bad at this or anything, I should take this as what I shouldn't do and change my habits. Now I need to do this. Okay, that's fine. I'll do that from now on. But the minute you start talking bad about yourself, you start bringing in a bad, this negativity in your life that you don't need. Like, you just don't need it. So never talk negatively about yourself. Always be positive about yourself. Because if you're not cheering for yourself, who is, right?
That is absolutely spot on. And some things that you're saying, you know, it's not just for obstacle course race and running. It's for our personal life as well. So, you know, Thank you so much for that. And Mark, as we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to tell or share with the audience, whether it's about your journey or upcoming races or anything else that you're excited about?
No, pretty much. You know, you guys got a big helping of my life and what I'm about and how I look at racing and everything. So, you know, if you're going to be out there at the event, like, say hi, like, let me know you listen to the podcast, and let's take a picture. Let's hang out and enjoy racing and have a good time. Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant, you said. And thank you so much for doing this. Really, really appreciate it, Mark.
No, thank you. Appreciate it.